Good morning. This thing echoes. So we're here for mindfulness practice. And why do we have to do that? Is there any reason we have to do this? I'm sure you all have a lot of good reasons why you do mindfulness practice. But since I'm here to remind you of what you already know, I'm going to give you some ideas about why it's a good thing. So I just have a number of points to cover, and the first one is about speed. The speed of our everyday life, of this culture that we're living in. I don't know about you, but I've been pretty caught up in it in my life lately. And also the demands on us from all sides sometimes. That's a good reason for slowing down. And I can tell you my own story a little bit. I'm in this program called Clinical Pastoral Education, and it's I'm working in a hospital that serves three states, and it's a busy place. It's a trauma center. It's got a helicopter that brings people in, and it's got inpatient hospice. It has a very good heart program. So a lot of people come there for heart surgery. And I'm assigned to the oncology floor and to the inpatient hospice beds and also an outpatient cancer unit, treatment unit, and a medical surgical floor. So that's the ground of my practice these days. And practicing mindfulness in that environment is really a challenge. It's a very, there's a lot of pressure. It's a pressure cooker, you know, because it's a high technology environment, and it's a place where people are healing from major physical crisis, but also dying on a regular basis, you know. People are coming and going right on my floor. And it is a joy and a privilege to work with people on that journey, you know. But there's also that crisis and stress and lots of emotion. And so driving up here from there was such a joy to do one thing, just one thing at a time, drive along the river road and and see the leaves and, you know, just let go of the pressure. Like coming out of the pressure cooker, and everything looked so vivid. All the trees, color. I recommend that drive. You should all come down and see me because it's a beautiful drive right now. Anyway. So, in the middle of all of that, there is visits with patients, which are often sacred encounters, if I may use that word, sacred, or let's say reverent encounters. And so amidst all that busyness and rush and chaos, which sometimes feels like just barely controlled chaos on the floors there are these little moments of connection and and they're very reverent, and I'm very grateful for them. But I do have to cope with the stress, so I'm so happy to be here with you today doing this practice, slowing down and coming back to just this. Oops. So speed. I think slowing down, we need to create a bridge between the cushion here and life, between this place and the hospital ward. And we build sort of our bridge here when we slow down and do one thing at a time and tune into our felt experience, the experience of our senses, and what Tim calls the, what does he call it, the first two aggregates? Stay with the first two aggregates. Okay. So that's what we can do here. We can really slow down. We can build that bridge between stillness and motion, between clarity and chaos, and we have a better chance when we're in the chaos, when we're in the pressure cooker, to respond out of our depths rather than just react. And my next point is, we need a break from human interactions based on social, surface social exchanges, and based on speech, following after speech. Because we humans on the surface level, our surface is seeded with lots of habitual reactive patterns. And when we stay at that level, we miss out. We miss out. So coming here and going deep helps us to build capacity to draw on our depths at all times. And we're here to get a rest from planning and striving. So if you're sitting there organizing the contents of your brain, you can relax now. And you can. Of course, you can't do that completely if you're the Tenzo, but you can be in each moment of chopping, each moment of setting out the bowls. So let's take a break from planning and striving, whether it's our vacation we're planning or the next retreat here at Zen Center or our week ahead, our busy week ahead. We can just take a break from that. We're also here to get in touch with our bodies, our breathing, our feelings, and work with any tensions and let go of those tensions. That's my work today. Sometimes when we're in retreat and we do this practice of releasing and letting go and resting in the now, some things bubble up for us, you know, and sometimes, you know, then we work with mindfulness of feelings, you know. Old losses and hurts can come up, and if you've done a number of retreats, and I know many of you have, they have a chance to move through us, and we can touch them, and they touch us, certainly. But after the tears, if we have tears fall, and after the rage moves through, we can get to a place where the sun comes out, you know, and everything looks fresh. Sky is blue and those leaves are gorgeous. And suddenly we see everything in a new and pure way, a way that we remember that we saw things, that we used to see things, maybe when we were children. So that's another reason we do this practice. Let's allow what needs to come through and settle into that, and then we can actually embody hope and joy for others. I think that getting in touch with our own sadness is a great practice because as I explained, you know, thing when our feelings and losses come through and we experience those and we let go, we are in a state of emptiness for a time. And out of emptiness comes hope, I think. I think it's a very hopeful. It's the place where hope springs from, I believe, is emptiness. And I know we don't use the word hope much in our tradition. Some of you may not know that, but we don't, and the Christians do use hope a lot. And I'm right now surrounded by Christians in my program. So this is how I explain to them that we embody hope. Or whatever it is we want to share with someone, whatever it is we want to give, we have to have that in our bodies. And just sitting with our own pain, just sitting with our own losses, it creates capacity, you know, to really be there for someone else in a way and to embody hope for them, walk with them in their dark times. Because we've been there, and we can and we can just show them. Another good reason for this is cultivating our ability to absorb and process the Dharma. What I notice about MZMC, where we are today, is it's a great place to learn the Dharma, and you can get some really sophisticated teachings here. For instance, the teachings that underlie this book that the practice period folks are reading each moment is the universe. There's some pretty complicated metaphysical concepts in here. And so that's great, you know. I love it. I love all the things that we get to learn here. And I also feel that in order to absorb those teachings and to embody them and put them into action in day-to-day life, we need to get simple. You know, just come here today and experience our immediate environment, our bodies and minds interacting with this environment. That's a good thing to do, so that those teachings, those complicated teachings, have some place to be grounded in. And don't just stay up here, you know, in the head. Let's see. To tune our awareness and strengthen our ability to stay with our immediate experience. I think there's people that pass years and even decades, and someday there's a crisis that comes up and they realize that, wow, I've been in this job for 20 years and I don't even know how I got here. You know, I can't recall the moment that I made the decision to be here, and I don't know how it came about and what's happened all that time. And I think that crisis, and I see a lot of crisis in what I'm doing now, and I've experienced crisis in my own life. I think that crisis results oftentimes, but not always, from our tendency to turn away from the present and turn away from what needs to be done in front of us. And I think when we just do what needs to be done in front of us, this moment and the next moment and the next, that eventually the effect of that cause is a good one. You know, we can rely on that. It's pretty simple. But we don't, it's good to plan. It's really good to plan. And we have to take care of the activity of planning. But if we stay with our moment-to-moment experience, we don't have to worry so much. Don't have to have so much anxiety about the future, because fully inhabiting your moments, as Tim Burkett says, is the way to the next moment and the next moment in a way that unfolds in a pretty wholesome way, I think. And another reason is just to practice being true to what's happening now. Just this. Or bear attention. So, to be true to what's happening now and just what's happening now can carry over into giving, you know, doing service. Because doing service or practicing dana, generosity from a place of present moment awareness and attending to what is, kind of cuts through that transactional nature of much of our giving, and much of our actions are based on some kind of a transaction, if you think about it, you know. We almost always relate to something we're going to do in terms of what it's going to give us. You know, that's just a real basic thing, and we know that, but I think it's a relief when we can let go of that. And this practice and this container can give us that chance to practice appreciating and letting go of experiencing reality without that transactional nature, without relating everything to me and mine, and reinforcing the solid sense of the self, which is such a source of difficulty. And then finally, I think it's to experience the joy of where we're at, being human, being here by the lake in the autumn, transitioning through the slowing ourselves down so we can notice the falling of the leaves, we can notice the colors, we can notice the jewel tones of the lake, giving ourselves that gift. That's really a gift. And one more way I think that this is helpful, if you need any other ways, is that it can help in our relationships, you know, in when we provide ourselves with space and attend to the present moment and practice just being here in a very simple way. It gives us a chance to release some of our clinging in relationship to other people, and I think gets us in touch with our own self-reliance as we sit on the earth, this earth that's supporting us. So, I want to read you a poem, if you don't mind, by Wendell Berry. He's a gentleman farmer who lives in Kentucky, and I really like him. I go among trees and sit still. All my stirring becomes quiet. Around me like circles on water, my tasks lie in their places where I left them, asleep like cattle. Then what I'm afraid of comes. I live for a while in its sight. What I fear in it leaves me, and the fear of it, and the fear of it leaves me. It sings, and I hear its song. You want to hear it again? Okay. I go among trees and sit still. All my stirring becomes quiet. Around me like circles on water, my tasks lie in their places where I left them, asleep like cattle. Then what I'm afraid of comes. I live for a while in its sight. What I fear in it leaves me, and the fear of it leaves me. It sings, and I hear its song. I realized last time I led a mindfulness day, which was quite a while ago, I read from this, I talked about this, our appointment with life, the better way of living alone. And I might read that today, just the verse, not all the commentary. But I wanted to find something from Katagiri's book to read for today, so it's very short. It's from chapter 9, Touching the Present Moment. Your life constantly gives you a chance, a great opportunity to touch the truth. If you touch it, everything becomes alive in a refreshing way. This refreshing life is called flexibility, fluidity, or freedom. At that time, you can really do something, something more than what you thought you could do. This is spiritual security. Spiritual security cannot be given to you. You have to find it yourself. And it can only be found within the source of existence that makes your life alive. That's called energy or emptiness. Most people misunderstand the Buddhist teaching of emptiness. thinking it means to destroy or ignore your existence. This is a big mistake. Emptiness is not negative. Emptiness is just letting go of fixed ideas in order to go beyond them. When you dance, when you sing, when you walk, when you do zazen, whatever you do, you should be empty first. Then your body and mind become flexible and you can really jump into painting, dancing, eating breakfast, washing your face, chanting, or doing zazen. At that time, you become one with your activity, whatever it is, and do your best. Thank you, Koji-san. So I just had that little talk today. I hope you're not disappointed, but if you are, just sit with that. So, does anyone want to share something that's inside that would like to be shared? That's okay. Sometimes discussion just leads to kind of leaking our mindfulness a little bit.